We all seen the guys playing dominoes. Older gentlemen, chilling on the side of the bodega, playing dominoes, minding their fucking business, excuse me. What do? It's the 29th. I have to hit him with C summons because I was told get a C summons or else. Number two, I'm ringing low. That's the only one I see because the bad guys aren't right there. I'm doing day tours right now. They're not out. The drug dealers are sleeping. Mm-hmm. So who am I targeting? These four gentlemen. And that's where the community problem arises.
Quota policing in Hulu's Crime Plus Punishment. Neighborhood watch dog whistling in Paramount's Rest in Power, the Trayvon Martin story. Does the universe bend toward justice? Not sure two white ladies are qualified to comment on that, but being qualified has never stopped us before. It's The Blotter Presents, episode 66. And I suppose I should also note that I'm not even a lady. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents, where crime is bad, but the stories about crime are sometimes very good. Also sometimes very good is my guest, Annabeth Chow. Welcome back, PL.
Hello, PL. I'm in a flight path.
Yes, it's that informal, shoes-off, last week of summer version of The Blotter Presents. Ms. Chow is outdoors at the moment, so that could be fun. I guess. I hope the neighborhood watch where you are is a little less strict and scary than in a community we'll be talking about later. But first, let's get to our most wanted section. Crime Plus Punishment, which, I mean, this is how it's rendered, is crime plus sign punishment, I guess, so that Tolstoy doesn't keep coming up on search results. Anyway, we're not talking about Tolstoy today. It's a new documentary from Hulu that dropped this past weekend. Here is the case file from Hulu's press materials. Crime Plus Punishment examines the United States' most powerful police department through the efforts of a group of active duty officers and a private investigator who risk their careers and safety to bring light to harmful policing practices which have plagued the precincts and streets of New York City for decades. Amidst a landmark class action lawsuit over illegal policing quotas, director Stephen Mang chronicles the real lives and struggles of a group of Black and Latinx whistleblower cops and the young minorities they are pressured to arrest and summons. I don't know. This is sort of a problem that has been like a ticker along the bottom of the New York City living experience as long as I can remember. Annabeth, is this something that you were aware of not living in New York City?
I had no idea. Like, I was completely unaware. So, yeah, it was very surprising to me.
New York City is always in sort of this strange position, or at least we have been for the last 17 years, where the tension between keeping everyone safe after 9/11 and the ways that that is executed, which are almost always bigoted in some way or involving inappropriate profiling, that's just something that the city is always contending with or saying it's contending with, and then things don't necessarily change that much. When they began filming this documentary, William Bratton was still the police commissioner with his broad Boston accent and very euphemistic way of putting things. Mm-hmm. Here he is talking at, I believe, the 2014 Police Academy graduation about how he sees the role of the city in preventing, quote, gang violence. Here's clip two.
Most of you are still too young to remember the devastation of the 80s and 90s. This city reclaimed its streets. It reclaimed its neighborhoods and its parks. And we, the police, were the integral and essential element in doing that. Well, the new mission for the New York City Police Department is going to be quite simply to save the children of this city. There are too many young men in this city carrying guns who have been drawn into the crews and into the gangs. And we need to prevent that from happening.
I mean, I just feel like that's one long dog whistle.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I am not too young to remember, like, New York in the 70s when it was, you know, going bankrupt and basically The Warriors was, like, a documentary.
Right.
I am not too young to remember the effects of crack, and I am not too young to remember, quote, Giuliani time and the fact that the big initiative on the part of the police department often meant going after people of color just because they were people of color to look like they were doing something. And I also can't help thinking of that line in P.G. O'Rourke where he said anytime a politician is talking about crack is, like crack is ruining our cities, mm-hmm. you can, in their minds, substitute the phrase and words are.
Black people.
Yeah, just yeah. like... I don't know. I mean, Giuliani, I guess, cleaned up the city, but he also drove a like permanent, very fat wedge between the haves and the have-nots, and I'm not sure that that's something that the city should be proud of.
Right, yeah. I didn't really know. I mean, I had never heard of Bill Bratton before I watched this documentary, and that makes me sound like country come to town, but it seems like every single word out of his mouth is a lie. Like, when he's on the cable news shows, when he's given that speech, it's just, it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and, so. You know, I don't know what I expect from, like, it's a commencement speech for the police academy. So, you know,
right.
Of course, this is how he's going to put it. And this is basically a politician. And you can't really go wrong being like, we need to make the streets of this city safe for our children.
Right. Yes, that's true.
But what you're also modeling is that children of color mm-hmm. are going to just be picked up repeatedly
right.
in order to make quotas that they claim don't exist but obviously do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty impressed by this documentary's access, and they gave to some of the participants, they gave, I think, watch cams, like little spy cams
yeah.
that were in their
or pins,
wristwatches.
Like some sort of spy pen.
Yeah, to record meetings with their superior officers where they were being pressured to bring their arrest numbers up.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, Crime Plus Punishment is also focusing on one case and one family that sort of stands in for all the families where these black teens or Latinx teens are just picked up for bullshit repeatedly.
Right.
And then eventually what the judge sees is not the bullshit, but the repeated arrests. And here's the private investigator Manny Gomez on that issue in clip three.
I could be here all night long meeting people like that kid, Mr. Mercado, without a doubt. But I mean, come on, the guy was arrested 7 times. All the arrests were dismissed. What does that tell you? You're taking days out of this kid's life, fingerprinting, and you're doing this to the point where eventually you're gonna get something to stick against the wall. Because the judge is going to say, oh, my God, why does he have so many arrests? Not that, oh, my God, he has so many arrests because the cops are harassing him and that they were dismissed. No, they don't see that. This is what kills me. I mean, it's blatant. The evidence is clear as day, and they don't do anything about it.
And on top of that, there's, I mean, other entire documentaries have been devoted to the problem of bail and kids sitting in Rikers for
years,
weeks, months, years on end.
Yeah, I was actually, I had it in my notes about this Pedro Hernandez on this documentary, who his mom can't post bail for him. And it reminded me so much of the Khalif Browder story.
Yes.
Because his mom was like, this has hurt him so much mentally. And I was like, this is exactly the same. It's a 17-year-old kid, you know, who...
Yeah.
Is just
who didn't
sitting there
do anything,
who didn't do anything. And, right.
Yeah. And who, you know, in order to get a private investigator, I mean,
right.
that like this guy sort of welcomes him to, quote, the family. He's like, you're my new stepson.
Yes.
And he's going to advocate for him. But he's like one. I mean, I don't know. This is me like on Donors Choose, basically being like, I can't. I can't give $10 to every single one. I can. Right. I have $10. Like, you have to start somewhere. But this is like half of the jail,
right?
And then the other half is people who don't have the enough insurance to deal with their obvious mental illnesses. But it's like this documentary. This was my issue with this documentary. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I think it's good. But I felt a little bit like it was actually two or three different documentaries kind of fighting each other in a sack.
Yeah.
Did you feel that way?
I felt, well, I did think it was disjointed in places. I just felt like it was such a slog, you know? I mean, it could have been cut in half, honestly. It was just like 20 minutes of establishing shots, you know?
Yeah, there was a lot of like, you know, we're all pretty familiar with the New York skyline, and I'm not sure
right. That
you need to present your chirons in this at this stately a pace.
Yes, exactly.
But I also felt like it could have been cut down by probably 20 minutes, but I think it could have been cut in half and been two documentaries, one about families like Pedro Hernandez's, mm-hmm. and one about the story of these cops, the New York 12, and their, you know, struggles to prove that they're being punished for refusing to deal with the quota system.
Right.
And then there's like even a second and a half the documentary in there about the policing that they are doing on the ground, and we see like one clip of one dude, mm-hmm. who's like, you know, he's like diffusing a, like, you know, testosterone scuffle outside a bodega.
Yes.
And I thought it was pretty interesting, and I would have liked to see more of that, like use the watch cam for that.
Oh, so that is, we see, yes, that's excellent. That's an excellent idea. That would have been amazing.
What they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's actually a clip. There's some unpleasant language towards the top, even for me. So be aware. And here's clip four.
We can either like beat him up and fight him and drag him or cuff him or you can talk to him.
Yo, yo, don't spend your dough in there no more, man. Don't spend your dough in there no more.
But this right here is the whole point. I was fucking with the young boy. This fucking faggot right here come up in there popping shit.
My man, that's what's up. Yo, don't spend your cheese in there no more, man. That's it, man. You got all these other bodegas, man. Don't go in there no more, man. Don't spend your dough in there, motherfucker, no more, man.
Always fucking violent.
No, we good, man. We good.
Then he wanna act like you wanna fight till I come outside. He grabbed the weapon. He wanna fucking fight.
It's done, man. It's done.
I mean, like, that's, yeah.
It was such a great point that he made, though, that they're not teaching these young officers to have conversations with people. They're just teaching them, you know, beat them up and bring them in.
Yeah.
You know?
And I was interested. I'm not proud of the fact that if we can't find anything to watch because my husband and I are the worst at picking movie. And it will take so long for us to agree on even a genre that we just end up watching Live PD.
Oh, my God.
So we watch a lot of Live PD. Also, I may actually like Live PD. One time there was like a guard turkey on an episode, and I've been waiting for that bird to come back ever since.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyhow, New York City is never on the list of jurisdictions that they follow. I'm sure because New York City Police's counterterrorism unit is super paranoid about anyone seeing the war room or whatever the reason
right.
is. But I am always pretty impressed by, like, they're on camera, so they have to be chill.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, great, whatever it takes. And those cops are like, what they're looking to do is not create paperwork and problems for people that, especially in certain jurisdictions in, I'm just going to say it, the panhandle of Florida, like fully half that show sometimes is like the Florida man thing.
Oh, yes.
But it's like, you know, the shirt is off. There's no shoes. they're obviously stealing, trying to steal a moped. And the cops are just like, so what's up, man? Because it seems like you're maybe trying to steal that. Where are you staying?
Right.
And they just like try. It doesn't always work, but they try to defuse it. And I'm fascinated by that because I would be terrible at that part of it. That I'd just be like, yeah, fucking, let's just lock them up. It's easier.
Right.
Because I'm an asshole. But yeah, it's just like, I think there's a whole other documentary there that's like, we who have been in uniform mm-hmm. for a dozen years sometimes actually know maybe better than this quota system. Gee, go figure.
Right.
So yeah, there was that. So that was frustrating because we got that one snippet where the guy who's like on a kid's bike.
Yes.
It's always
a kid's bike too.
Yeah, with like the big old like vintage styly banana handlebars that he's like storming off on this bike.
Like
basically.
With his feet not pedaling, just walking it away.
No.
Oh, poor thing. Oh man.
Mm. That he's like, you know, you come at, but I mean he didn't have a bad point either, if I understood him correctly, at least as far as the cops coming up to break up this fight. And he's like, well, you know, you're stepping to me.
Right.
And the cop wasn't, but why wouldn't he think that?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because that's always been the experience. So I like just embedding a camera like outside a bodega or a bar where a lot of fights tend to happen. And then just like watching what happens in terms of community policing, I'd be super into.
Yeah.
I'd be super into watching that.
I wish they would do one that was based in New Orleans because, okay, so this is going to sound crazy, but I was reading the Reddit New Orleans thread and they were like, what does New Orleans do great? And so many people were like, NOPD, crowd control, because they're so used to every festival, sure. Mardi Gras, Second Lines, everything that happens in the streets. And I would be fascinated to read up or to watch a documentary about something like that, where they're so good at that one thing. They're bad at murders, but they're very good at sort of right. dealing with people, you know?
Yeah.
So
I'd watch the hell out of that.
Right?
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, some of my favorite cops reruns are the NOPD, like Mardi Gras ones,
yeah.
where they just have like literally the cavalry, like horses.
Yep.
And brooms, and they are just sweeping drunk 19-year-olds from Tampa
mm-hmm.
down the curb.
Exactly.
And they're like, it's going to be fine.
And they're like,
you won't
it's
remember
cool.
anything.
Nope.
Yep. Do you have a pulse? Go on.
Yep.
Walk it off.
Right.
Walk it off.
Right.
Yeah, I would definitely watch that. Yeah, this documentary is like, it's worthwhile, but it was a little bit frustrating, not just because the subject matter is like, you know, there's such an obvious fix for this, which is don't make policing into a numbers game. Like don't run this like it's, Glengarry Glen Ross, like duh.
Yeah.
But just that there were like a couple of three more better documentaries in there also, that if they just focused on one or more of the topics, then it would have been better.
Yeah, it was all over the place. I mean, it was very interesting and informative, but I was also like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, and there's, I mean, some of the points are worth repeating. And here's a clip from when they appeared on NBC News and, some of the members of the class action, and they were just talking about, like, first of all, there's obviously quotas, and second of all, here is the day of the month that you do not want to run into a uniformed officer who is behind. Here is clip 5.
Well, I can tell you, I'm a police officer, there are quotas in the NYPD.
Are they lying?
Absolutely. It's illegal for them to admit it.
The worst thing you can have is a police officer that needs an arrest for the month.
You might not see nothing. You're supposed to be visible. You might not see anything, but you go hunting, like bounty hunting for an arrest.
Kids get locked up for BS, for nonsense, ride their bicycles.
The problem is when you go hunting, when you put any type of numbers on a police officer to perform, we are gonna go to the most vulnerable.
The most vulnerable.
Of course, we're gonna go to LGBT community. We're gonna go to the black community. We're gonna go to those people that have no vote, that have no power.
All they want us to do is go out there and lock them up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what's happening. The most offensive part is what I believe this is now Sergeant Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
In our last clip from this section, talking about why the city is not particularly motivated to change the status quo as far as unspoken quotas. Here's clip six.
Newly appointed mayor probably bit off more than he can chew and didn't understand just how much the city's budget depends on law enforcement to generate part of that revenue by issuing summonses and arrests. Because the reality is law enforcement uses black bodies to generate revenue.
He was awesome.
He really
was. I loved him. He brought every receipt he had.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And he basically, like, I think they may have promoted him to, I mean, he certainly thinks they promoted him basically to shut him up,
mm-hmm.
which failed. Yay.
Yeah, right.
But he's like, yeah, we have a picture in the visual aids, which you will see on social media. That's at Blotter Presents on both Twitter and Facebook, of him accepting his sergeant's certificate. And then they have to do the, you know, what's it called? The stop and the grip and grin.
Oh, right.
for the pictures. And Bratton is like, cheese. And Raymond's like, nope.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't even blink. And then sort of just takes... You know, I mean, good for him. And he seems to think, like, you know, this is a start.
Right.
But I'm not going to back down. Like, if they thought that I would back down because I'd been promoted.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going to be louder because it got results. So he was great.
Yeah.
I hope that there's a part two of this and that they focus on one of the things that we've been talking about in this segment, because overall, I don't know, like, I think this is an important issue and one that it's worth remembering. And especially with, like, prison strikes that are happening as we record this, I think that it's, you know, you could do worse than sit and watch this for 2 hours, but I don't know. I mean, would you recommend it to friends and strangers or no?
It's tough because I did not enjoy watching it just because it was like when I had to restart the pilot of The Wire three separate times,
just
to like get through it. But it's important because we need to know about it. Like, I didn't know anything about any of this, and you know, we need to, as the kids say, stay woke. However, I just feel like it could have been so much more efficient in the way that it was presented. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Agree.
Yeah,
maybe a re-edit. Although they did start filming this a few years ago. Like,
yeah.
Bratton has not been commissioner for a minute now.
Right.
I'm not really sure what the quote new guy is doing to change this kind of thing, but getting Bratton out is generally a good sign.
Good. Yeah. I mean, would you recommend it?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I don't think it's bad, but if you're within the sound of my voice, like, I feel like we gave you an overview of the issues and I don't know. Like, what I would like to do is, listeners, if you have recommendations about, like, long-form articles or anything else that we could read that sort of condenses this and is a little bit more efficient in terms of educating ourselves on the issue, please, again, social media, bunting@the-blotter.com, let me know, and then I can recommend that instead. I don't think this director is bad. He got excellent access and excellent footage, but I hope on the next feature he's a little more focused and also confident in his story and not relying so much on the B-roll of the city, because we know what the Freedom Tower looks like. We work here.
Yes, exactly.
So return with us now in our cold case section. This is not really a cold case. This series, Rest in Power, the Trayvon Martin story, is still, as we record this, airing. I think they're wrapping it up this coming week. Or actually Labor Day weekend. So there's a couple of episodes left. It's a limited series from Paramount, which when it was Spike, did the Kalief Browder story, which I thought was outstanding.
Yes.
I had high expectations for this one. Here's the case file from Deadline.com. Produced by Sean Carter and the Cinemart, Rest in Power, the Trayvon Martin story, recounts the life and legacy of Trayvon Martin, who was shot and killed in 2012. We'll get back to that part. And whose death gave rise to the Black Lives Matter movement. Trayvon Martin was an unarmed 17-year-old African-American high school student shot and killed by a neighborhood watch member in Sanford, Florida, where he was visiting a friend with his father. George Zimmerman was acquitted of a second-degree murder charge, utilizing Florida's Stand Your Ground law, claiming he shot Martin in self-defense. It's weird because I was reading this and it's like, who is that for? Someone literally from outer space? Like, right. Who isn't familiar with this case? But then I was like, holy shit, that happened in 2012?
Mm-hmm.
Like, technically, it was still Obama's first term. I had completely forgotten his comments about it and then the conservative
ridiculousness.
Yes, like peacocking that happened after that. Like, there were a lot of details about this that I had forgotten. I think because I, like, the totality of George Zimmerman's fuckery is too much to take. Like, you just shut down after a while.
Right.
He is the worst person.
He is the worst. Well, not the worst.
He is the worst person.
We know who the worst is, but he is the worst.
Yeah. He's bottom five for sure. I feel like people who care about their fellow human beings in this country have been like kind of living with this case and its aftermaths every day in a way that made it feel, it was just very strange to me that it was 2012. I was like, wait, with a two at the end?
Yeah,
what?
I know. I mean, I can't believe that it's been that long. Honestly.
I know. And how, well, I can believe how little has changed, but right. Yeah, let's just, I hesitated to put this clip in, but let's just hear a snippet of George's 911 call on the night in question.
Okay.
Clip 7.
Late teens. Something's
wrong with him. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. God, these assholes, they always get away. Shit, he's running.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
No, we extra don't need you to do that. And I think I was not aware or I had forgotten until I was Googling around just to marinate in what a fucking shit sack George Zimmerman is.
Mm-hmm.
That this guy, we'll have a link to this in the show notes, but there's this woman that calls the police and the fire department on people practicing their steel drums for an upcoming festival, like, daily. She's been doing this for years now. She's known as the steel drum Grinch of Crown Heights.
Oh my God.
There's a link in the show notes. The comments on Gothamist are pretty glorious. Mostly, there's always a couple of dickweeds, but this just reminded me of that. But writ so much larger and like not funny at all that this guy apparently was just calling,
right,
911 and not 911.
Yeah,
like the
non-emergency
number.
Line or whatever.
Yeah, that he's like, so about these black people, and they're like, hi, George. Like, what
right.
the fuck?
Right. Yeah.
Don't
I mean,
you just
I was
block that guy.
I was thinking about it too. Like, if if this had happened today, like, The Root would have written an article about it and called him, like, you know, Street Surveillance Steve or whatever. But then, oh, you know, it ended in murder. So, fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, but it took a while to end in a charge of murder. Initially, I just had to pull this snippet because it just was maddeningly unserious about the fact that a life had been taken.
Right.
Like, that both the cop and George are acting like it was some
like he had missed a class.
Yeah, like doing whippets and they broke his garage door window. Like, you killed a kid.
Right.
For being African American while you're studying criminal justice, but you don't want to miss class to do a walkthrough of the felony you committed.
Yeah.
And then the cop at the end, here's clip 8.
Before we get home, can you call me?
Yes, sir.
So we can go ahead and walk through the scene entirely.
Class tomorrow.
What are you taking?
I'm continuing for my bachelor's.
In what?
Criminal justice.
Okay. Can you get a note?
Okay.
You are the note.
Can you get
asshole.
A note?
I got a couple notes for both of you.
It made me so mad. I could not. I had to turn it off for a second. When he's just so flippant about all of it. Oh, can you get a note? Yeah, like, okay, shut the fuck up. And then, you know, there's the one black police officer is basically, like, super incredulous. And then all of the other ones are just, like, shepherding Zimmerman through this process. Like, treating him with kid gloves, basically.
Yeah, so they don't get sued.
Exactly.
For violating his stand your ground rights.
Correct.
Even though there is audio.
Right.
Of him chasing Trayvon.
Yeah.
And I really don't think, like, I am dispensing with allegedly. Sorry, not sorry. I think the audio is pretty clear as to what happened. And also, George Zimmerman is a crazy monster.
Yep. Yes.
Whose stalker is doing 20 years, but George is just, you know,
chilling.
Still out there.
Right.
Chilling. I watched the first two episodes so far, and I think that this is just as well done as the Kalief Browder story.
Same.
I mean, it's not an easy sit.
No.
I can't be like, oh, it's such a fun show. Like, it's horrible.
No, there's nothing funny about it.
It's making you carry the weight with his family and his friends and law enforcement, and that is appropriate. You hear the screaming on the 911 tape repeatedly, other people's 911 calls.
Right.
Death screams of Trayvon. There are pictures. I mean, it's nothing gory, but just pictures that they put on the screen without comment of him.
Right.
Face down in a heap.
When they showed the pictures, just his legs and those Jordans.
I know.
Oh, my God. Like, that is such a... It's so powerful. It's so weird, you know, how powerful it is. But just... He was a 17-year-old kid with just, like... He loved his Jordans. I don't know.
I know. And this is, like, not abstract. I think it's really important for all... you know, documentaries about murder to just take a minute and let us be uncomfortable with this horror
right.
that has occurred and the outward ripples, because that's what, like, this isn't this isn't Debate Club.
Right.
Someone died. And you called for our next clip. Is that why you asked us to play this?
Pretty much.
To play this one?
Yeah.
All right. Clip 9.
I just hear a scream that you just don't ever want to hear in your life. I see the picture on the table of Trey Land.
That is Tracy Martin, Trayvon's father's fiance. That's who they were visiting. And again, this happened in 2012.
Yeah.
And she's still completely unmanned, I guess. That's, you know, we need another word that means that. But yeah, spooked.
Yeah. It's
set back.
It's just the humanity of it all, you know. It really, I guess, yeah, brings it into focus. You know, this was a kid with a family, with a stepmom who loved him. And, you know, she has to read about it and look at it and watch it. And, you know, his dad said at the beginning, like, I did not want to do this, but I have to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. And his mom says that a bunch of times. And imagine the guilt that this woman must feel. I had a clip, and then I wound up not pulling it, but she talked about how they moved to this community, which was a gated community, to raise the kids, and, you know, it was safe there, is the implication. And but then she's like, well, people weren't all that friendly, but whatever.
Yeah.
And then fucking phone a friend George.
Right.
Clip 10.
Stanford Police Department, line is recorded. Now let's speaking.
My name is George. The kids in the neighborhood have gotten accustomed to playing in the street. And it's pretty habitual now.
How many?
And they're running. Probably like 5 or 6. They're, you know, under 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Like every single one of us did.
Yeah.
Riding our bikes in the street.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I mean, I used to live at the sort of like Venn overlap of 3 different high schools. And there were certain times of day when, like, there's a like roving cat packs of 14-year-olds that will let you know how you're looking.
Right.
And they're never impressed. I mean, they weren't with me. I was told I was drag like every day.
Oh my God.
For a year. And it's like, you know, and one time my brother, who we lived in the same house at that time, he's like, are you gonna, what is that? And I'm like, well, I do look kind of drag, bro. Come on. Like, you you work here, you know what's up, is A. And B, they're 13.
Right. Yeah. And it,
like,
and then when he was like, they're under 12 years old. Like, then why are you calling the fucking cops? What is wrong with you? Just be like, go home, y'all.
Yeah. Or find something that they're doing
right,
and report that. Like, just being outdoors is not that's not a thing.
Or you know what else? Shutting the fuck up is free. Do that.
Moving, also free. I don't understand people who are always like, rah. Like, you know, there's places you can live where there's no people around. Go to one of those places,
right.
Please. I'll help you pack.
Vermont would love you.
Yeah, Vermont's like, nope, we're closed. Oh, man. Mm. Heat. I found myself taking copious notes about what a shit brick this guy is. I don't even know why.
Yeah.
Exactly. Frankly, like, there's something about him that's, like, pathetic that I have to seize on, because it's like I can't get my arms around how horrible everything else about it is, and I just have to focus in on his being this asshat. And it's, I mean, the documentary is effective in that way, but it's also, like, I feel a little bad taking my eye off the ball and making fun of George Zimmerman's goatee in my notes.
Right.
Because that's where.
But I mean, it's almost like something you have to do for your own, like, mental health self-preservation.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, yeah, I guess the comparison is like that I occasionally comment that I can't believe they can't find a better picture of the president.
But is there?
And like... No. Like, first of all, I think they legit can't. Second of all, I know for a fact they're not trying, because I wouldn't be. And third of all, like, sometimes you just have to think about that. And
exactly.
Not that we're hurtling into a North Korean sun.
Right.
So, yeah. But this, I would compare Rest in Power to, why can't I think of the name of it? Shit, Dear Zachary. Oh my.
Yeah, I was just, it was on the tip of my brain.
Yes, mine too. The far tip in a different time zone, but I got there. I can't say it's enjoyable, but I like bearing witness with it, I think is worth doing.
Yes.
It's well made. It's just harsh.
It's hard, but it really is. It moves so quickly and it's riveting, and you are sitting there like, I cannot believe that I'm seeing this with my own two eyes. And then it just gets worse. Honestly.
Yeah, it does. It really,
but
yes,
it's
matters.
So worth
matters
it.
Do not improve on the cheery front, but it really is worth it. And
I mean, Jay-Z is out here making amazing documentaries. Who knew?
I know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised by that. Like, it's all narrative, right? Hip hop is narrative. Documentaries are narrative.
It's
if he's
true.
Good at one, he's probably going to be okay at the other, or at least he's Jay-Z.
Right.
He could pay someone who's good at it.
He's extremely good at a lot of things, except one thing.
Yeah.
Which is keeping it in his little pants.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. But we're
sorry.
Not here to praise
sorry.
Or bury Jay-Z. Yeah, this should be available on demand. I will check the show notes, but I think it's definitely, I think you can watch the episodes that have aired to date on Paramount's website. There will be a link in the show notes. I definitely recommend it because I think this is a tough topic to keep contained as a filmmaker. Or as a maker of stories, to just like not be overwhelmed by rage, to not be lecturing the viewer. They have excellent access to the family, to friends, to activists and civil rights attorneys, and it's well shot. And yeah, I think it's really,
it's really really good.
Yeah. It's a rough one, though. You called for another couple of clips. Do you want to take us through those before we wrap up here?
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Clip 11. It's basically about, I guess, white people just finally fucking getting involved. You know, I mean, that's pretty much all I want to say about it.
All right, here's clip 11.
Yeah.
It's not as if we hadn't seen the deaths of young black people, that we weren't paying attention to injustice. But in 2012, there was this emergence of social media whereby we could connect with one another.
Facebook was a big part of that. You realize that you're not alone, and also you realize you got a lot to learn. It became particularly uncool to not talk about what was going on in the world.
We felt it collectively. I remember seeing on social media as saying, if you're not talking out Trayvon Martin, I don't want you on my wall. I don't want you on my Twitter feed. It was the first time I started hearing white people say, oh man, I think I need to check my own racism.
Yeah.
Remember when that worked? Remember shame, Annabeth?
Remember shame. Yeah, but
remember shame.
It first of all, like, I forgot to say this one thing. It also sort of speaks to the power of Black Twitter, which is amazing. But also, I mean, I grew up in the Deep South where everybody was racist, and I mean, I had to take that to heart. Like, there are so many uncomfortable things that, you know, happened that I was just like, oh my God, I did that. Or I have said this, or I've had this belief, or whatever. And when you, like, kind of sit back and think about it, it's like, oh my God, I was fucked up. And, like,
yeah,
you know, like, I'm still learning, of course. But it's also, like, it's just a very crazy place to be.
I think it's pretty easy for white people to just not engage with this because
they don't have to,
and also because they feel like, well, if I try to engage with this and care about it, I will offend someone, or, but you know, who cares what I think? And that second part is true. Like, no one needs to care what I think,
right,
about Trayvon Martin or really anything else. I'm just some guy on the internet, but you know, I think that this case made it much harder for white people to not see racism as a problem for everyone.
Right.
As a, you know, as something that makes the world and all of us a lesser place by and lesser people by letting it continue. So,
yeah,
you know, not that anyone has to like get up and give a speech or anything, but it's like, okay, other, you know, other people's problems are actually your problems. We are all in this together to some extent. So,
right.
And I think this documentary does a good job sort of putting a hand out to people who might not otherwise think they care about this issue, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It probably doesn't make any sense. I've had a lot of iced coffee today and none of it's working.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think that this case energized people from, you know, from the family on down, which is addressed in the last clip that you called for. So let's hear clip 12, and then maybe you have a follow-up comment.
Okay.
It took my son being shot down to make me stand up. For me, who really wasn't paying attention to the things that was going on with this country, it definitely woke me up. It made me pay attention. It made me want to fight.
Oh, I mean, just listening to that makes me emotional. I don't really have anything to say about it, except that it's just so powerful. I feel like Trayvon's parents drive this documentary. You know,
yeah,
I don't think
absolutely.
Without the access that they got to them, this would not have been as good as it was. And I mean, Sabrina Fulton, bless you.
Yeah.
You know,
and Tracy, I mean, they're both very charismatic people, but I think that like they had to learn that on the worst fucking job in the world.
Exactly. Yes.
Which is you're burying your child. The person who killed him is apparently shielded from consequences by state law.
Right.
And now you, while you're trying to deal with all of that, now you're spokespeople for this seismic response
right.
in the culture. And how do you honor all of those things and not get an ulcer and become a substance abuser? Like, I just,
yeah,
that's a lot. That's a warrior heart that can contain all of that. So, and there, I mean, they're up to it, apparently.
They're up to it.
Yep. And George Zimmerman, chilling.
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 Yep.
I mean, someone did try to kill him.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad about it.
Yeah, I'm not. There will be no flags at half staff in this house.
Not upset.
For that nonsense.
Right.
Well, I would say I got some not despairing emails while Annabeth was preparing for this podcast.
Oh, no.
But you know, it's not a cheery pick me up, but it in some ways it is like affirming that this is why I do this podcast and why I do the site. Like, true crime can actually be extremely well made and compelling and hopeful, even when it's about a horribly bleak subject, because of that. So
yes,
this is a good example, and it's free on demand. Good for you, listeners. Get, you know, definitely give it a look.
I know.
It's good.
Like, when we get off this call, I'm definitely going to watch the rest of it.
Yeah,
so.
Same. And usually I'm like, yeah, I'll watch it if it's on, and then I don't get to it because I'm prepping something else. But
right.
this one, I'm definitely going to spend some time with because it's important. And yep. Once again, you will find a link to that in the show notes. Annabeth, where can people find you out there in the wide world?
I am out there on
I'm sitting
Twitter.
In front of my house.
I'm on Twitter at abchow.com, not abchow.com, at abchow, A-B-C-H-A-O.
All right. Thank you so much for coming back.
I'm so happy to be here.
Coming up on The Blotter, as the NFL returns, so does Dan Brady with Aaron Hernandez Uncovered and Crime in Sports. After that, we'll have my permanent house guest, Toby Ball, on Oxygen's Unspeakable Crime. Until then, got a tip for The Blotter Presents? Find me on social media. That's Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. Or you can email me at bunting@the-blotter.com. You can become an official Blotter tipster at the Patreon page. That's patreon.com/Blotter Presents. Like the podcast? Tell a friend and rate it on iTunes. Don't like the podcast? Tell no one. My guest has been Annabeth Chow, and she's on Twitter at @abchow. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I confidentially inform you that I hope you'll tune in next time.